This Cisco Executive Thought Leadership podcast was produced in conjunction with Knowledge at Wharton. An increasing number of network assaults, server attacks, and data leaks by trusted employees have fixed the enterprise spotlight on electronic espionage and insider threats. While companies are encouraging the knowledge sharing that fuels innovation, how can they also assess and manage the security of their information? In this two-part podcast series, Knowledge at Wharton talks with John N. Stewart, Cisco Vice President and Chief Security Officer, along with Andrea Matuition, Wharton Professor of Legal Studies and Business Ethics, about the evolving security landscape. In Part 1, Stewart and Matuition spoke about the ways companies are vulnerable to data breaches and how the legal system is evolving to address those concerns. In the following segment, they discuss how collaborative tools have raised the stakes of securing the distributed workplace and what companies can do to safeguard themselves.
Andrea and John, thanks again for joining us. John, what is the impact of collaboration tools, social media, and other Web 2.0 technologies on enterprise security? As it becomes more prevalent, how is this playing out at Cisco?
So, two-part question, Anna. The first part directly related to collaboration tools and social media. The impact is, frankly, like nothing I think I have ever seen before, predominantly because we're living it. So the brand new capabilities that collaboration tools are bringing to bear are bringing in all sorts of ancillary societal issues. So for example, if you think about how social media is all about creating a presence on the internet, then that presence at a personal level can be equated to your presence inside of your enterprise. So the idea that you could almost go unnoticed, if you will, in your neighborhood as to what you do in your job, and then potentially be a high-profile person in a company, those two can be linked together these days, and that's just a singular example. Secondarily, you can envision how the productivity enablement of collaboration, in some perspectives, brings in brand new obligations and responsibilities on the users, in a sense saying that the firewall protected the enterprise, except collaboration tools are intended to connect people beyond the firewall. And so now you're facing a scenario in which the idea of how to move information from a controlled environment to a shared environment becomes the responsibility in the shoulders of the user community. As we're seeing it play out at Cisco, here's what we're seeing so far. So first is that it's not as if I've got all these magic answers. And we've had other podcasts in which we've talked about there is no technology magic answer here. And I very much agree with that. But second, we really believe that we don't exactly know instinctually what the threat surface and attack surface of collaboration tools are and the security aspect of this. So in some perspective, we are learning as we go along. I don't think we can avoid this because the use of the technology and the tools is brand new. So we're starting to learn how people will use them and then slowly and carefully letting them and then learning for what we can do to best keep them safe while doing so.
Are you seeing businesses confronted with the same opportunities across different industries and regions? Andrea, your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think that's very much the case, that businesses across various industries are starting to harness these very powerful collaboration tools to both increase productivity and to give some structure to their internal knowledge management ventures. This type of technology really took root first, as one might expect, in technology-focused businesses. For example, Microsoft has been using wikis and other social collaboration tools for several years to assist in their knowledge management internally. Now, non-technology businesses are following suit, and they're also starting to increasingly harness these kinds of collaboration tools. The thing that is an interesting corporate evolution in this use of tools is that you're, in essence, starting to change the way that institutional knowledge is passed within enterprises. Previously, it would be a human-to-human exchange, and so the human capital was inherently rooted within an individual person. With these kinds of collaboration technologies, such as wikis and other group-built knowledge harnessing tools, you start to take the knowledge out of the human. The human becomes less necessary. For a business, that's a very positive development in some ways, in that you have the institutional knowledge remain with the institution. And even though you do have some worker turnover, it enables the new people who come into roles to get up to speed much more quickly and to have a sense of the institutional history that led to certain decisions or to a product being built a certain way. And so in this way, you have productivity gains that would really not have been possible without some of the technologies that enable collaboration.
Staying with you, Andrea, what are the legal and or policy issues of this shift to a more collaborative, distributed workplace?
Some of the same issues that we discussed in the first podcast obviously come up in this context. As you start to deposit institutional knowledge in one location, you face some additional challenges with information control. The idea of maintaining least privilege, meaning as few people as possible have access to certain amounts of data, inherently exists in tension to a certain extent with the idea of a highly collaborative, highly centralized, knowledge-based rather than human-based work environment. So the benefit of harnessing that knowledge into one place can also create some legal concerns, both positively and negatively. If you have a very detailed record of decision-making processes internally and the life of a corporate entity, in instances where you're seeking to demonstrate, for example, due care, this can be very helpful to protecting, for example, your trade secrets as a business. But if you're on the other end of the litigation, through some of these collaborative repositories of information, depending on what's in there, you may actually be creating a record that is useful to your opposing counsel that is discoverable in a piece of litigation. So there's a double-edged sword when you look at it from a legal standpoint. There are both benefits and potential risks to having highly recorded corporate decision-making processes in centralized locations. The other concern that I'm seeing crop up with regularity, as knowledge becomes very focused into technology-mediated spaces, be they wikis or other places, it becomes easier to outsource work to remote locations, in particular to other countries, and the workers who are sitting in other countries perhaps don't have the same sort of legal and other constraints upon them to treat corporate information and consumer information that may be within the possession of the corporation with the same levels of care that U.S.-based employees and subsidiaries may. So there have been a few incidents where outsourced data processing, which works well from an efficiency standpoint for the corporation, has led to some unexpected corporate policy, corporate PR, and potentially legal problems where, for example, in one case, there was an outsourced set of health data that was being processed in another country, and the processor believed that payment was not being provided in an adequately prompt fashion. And so this health data, which included very sensitive information about diseases and such of consumers based in the U.S., ended up being published to a website as a punishment for what was perceived as a business slight. And recourse in those kinds of situations becomes tricky because the acts which we would deem criminal in this country are not necessarily criminalized in other countries. Consequently, without that kind of criminal reciprocity, getting foreign authorities to get that website down or help out with a criminal prosecution may be a true challenge, if at all possible. Similarly, data protection laws vary dramatically across countries, and getting judgments enforced in other countries is something that presents grave challenges for companies that are operating there. The last thing that I'll point out is that the whole nature of the corporate forum is really changing. As technology tools are increasingly starting to drive some of the structures that are emerging within corporations, some of the problems that we're seeing in data leakage and tensions with trying to harness these technologies in optimal ways. That's a natural growing pain that's happening in businesses trying to maximize their use of potentially highly efficiency producing tools while yet retain their sense of culture, retain their traditional goals as an enterprise. One of the reasons why we're seeing increased information leakage, apart from the mandatory disclosure that's being driven by law, is that companies are really just learning how to implement good security practices. We're still very much in the nascence of all of these technologies taking root within mainstream business. And so people make mistakes. People are learning. And it's an exciting time to have this transformation happening in the way that business enterprises do business, leveraging these new technologies that are constantly arising.
John, how do you secure the enterprise as it becomes increasingly distributed, with more employees increasingly using mobile devices and working remotely?
So I think we're coming back to where we started in some perspectives in this industry. I've always found it, and this is going to sound silly coming from a technology company, but I've always found it sort of kind of funny that we've always said in no uncertain terms that the number one defense is awareness and education, and yet it frequently is one of the least invested in areas when it comes to most security programs I walk throughout the industry and throughout my peers, including us. And we still don't equally invest in it on par with, our technology investment. So when I say we're coming back to where we started, we are coming back to the place that says the way you do it is you teach people what they need to know. And by that, you don't try and overly teach them. Security experts that focus on nothing but this industry have to basically get to the simple basic points, because unfortunately, we're not about to prepare, nor should we, everyone to know all the security items that most security teams do. So what you're really trying to do is you're trying to influence very particular and key behaviors. The second thing you got to do, and we've referenced this in other podcasts at times, is talk about procedural. So if you're going to get to this point of actually saying that you've got a distributed environment, you're using more employees that are in or outside of our country, nationally, internationally, they're using technologies that are in partner environments, et cetera, and they're starting to, for example, use mobile devices, what you have to do is procedurally and with data make decisions about, for example, what you want to do about it. A random example might be if you're going to enable a remote user to start using mobile phones and mobile mail, require security first before that service is enabled, and that way it actually goes in concert with the service. In a sense, basically saying it's a tax, but you get what you want, you just get with it, if you will, the security control that mitigates some of its risk. The last thing you got to do is, and I guess I've still always got to get back to this, is still include technology in this discussion. And this is because, frankly, at this stage anyway, security defense in a technology sense is still exorbitantly more complicated than most people can live with. Andreas touched on this at least once. It comes down to everything, to including the fact that administering your own computer is rapidly getting overwhelming just because of the many things you have to think about. So you do have to have a technology discussion that typically will include layers, but more importantly, we'll talk specifically to the idea that says collaboration is going to continue, distributed workforce is absolutely going to continue, and that innovation is going to continue. So marry in a technology set of answers where they're available, frankly, just to make sure that you can protect people from themselves. And by that I mean not because they're maliciously trying to do something, but because the overwhelming nature of some of the threats we're facing are ones that, frankly, technology is the only step you could take at this stage.
Echoing what John just mentioned, if I can pipe in, it really is true that things, technology challenges such as phishing, currently don't have adequate legal recourse behind them, and technology is certainly the first line of defense at this juncture, and really the only way that we can currently combat risks to information leakage, both from enterprises and employees unintentionally clicking on that phishing email and compromising the network, and from clicking on that, the same consumer can click on that email at home and compromise their own personal information. So there's a synergy between employee behavior and consumer personal behavior, and in certain technology circumstances, there aren't legal means that can protect people from intentional or unintentional acts that lead to data leakage for corporate enterprises. So technology is certainly the first line of defense.
Thank you for listening to part two of our series on the evolving security landscape. For more information on executive thought leadership at Cisco, please visit www.cisco.com/go/ETL. For more information on Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.